Hello and welcome. This is Kane Minkus and welcome to the Industry Rockstar 6-month Revenue Accelerator call number 8. This is the second half of the 20 ways to increase your revenue. And so today we're going to finish those 20 ways by going through the other 10 of essentially what I call the 10 lesser known key areas for more cash flow. And this is essentially going to give you the total gamut of everything that I have ever really done as a strategy to increase cash flow in my businesses when I really needed a bump, or just in general, if I wanted to take it to the next level and sustain it at a new cash flow level. So flip over to the first page, which is entitled 10 Lesser Known Ways or 10 Lesser Known Key Areas for More Cash Flow. And I'll run you through these really quickly. This is what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about how to use these things called needle movers and why they'll help you improve your cash flow. Then we're going to talk about how to get someone to whip you. I hope you like that one. We'll talk about some rewards and consequence structures. How do you put those in place to increase cash flow? We're then going to look at how to add a new revenue stream. You know, maybe adding new revenue streams to your business could be exactly the thing that really boosts up your cash flow in the next few months here. So we'll talk about how to do that. Then we'll talk about the topic of need for speed. How do we increase the speed and the velocity of everything we're doing? Because obviously if you get more done in a shorter amount of time, well, including closing deals and getting deals across the line and, you know, invoicing or getting your products or services done, then you can get more cash flow. Then we'll do M&A and P, which we call MAP. You can tell I was a little bit spicy when I created this one. And then we're going to talk about investing in ATM machines. This is going to be one of our other strategies. How do we have you start investing in essentially ATM machines? Now, we're not going to have you buy ATM machines or create printing presses like we've done in the States for years. But we're going to talk about how do you metaphorically get yourself invested into ATM machines. Then we'll look at licensing. How do you license what you got? And then we'll jump over to commission-only staff and look at how do we increase our cash flow through doing more commission-only work with our staff. And then we'll talk about how to use all of your assets. How can you use your assets to increase your cash flow? And oh my goodness, check it out. There's a bonus tip called Watch Every Penny. So let us jump into these techniques. We're going to start to go through them here. Go over to way number one in your handouts. And this is called using needle movers. Now, I'm going to present to you, like I said, these lesser known techniques. So you may on the surface go, well, wait, how did these actually increase cash flow? But I think that you'll notice as I go through them, you'll start to understand that how these different little subtle things will shift and change your cash flow in your business. You know, last call we went through 10 ways, and they were very tactical, very strategical, and very much around the business that you can be shifting and changing. What we're going to be looking at in these 10 ways is things that I think would probably be lesser obvious ways to really increase cash flow. But of course, that's why you're going through this training, is to find the things that we've been doing that are not the obvious ones that really make a huge difference. So let's jump back into using your needle movers. Now, what are needle movers? Needle movers are essentially your targets. And you might be wondering, why would setting targets change my cash flow? But let me explain. We do it in a very unique way, and I've trained corporations after corporation, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of our corporate clients that we've worked with in how to use needle movers. And the number one thing that they say is the way we help them shift and change the way they set up their targets actually shifts their cash flow. And so that's why I'm teaching this to you. So what is a needle mover? A needle mover is a range or set of targets that you're going to utilize to be clear about what it is you're trying to achieve in your business. Now, people would call a typical target a goal, but a goal or a specific target is really not the best way to set your targets for the year. And let me explain. Goals are finite. In other words, you either reach a goal or you don't. So if you said, I want to earn, for example, 100,000 pounds or euros or dollars this year, and that was your goal, you would either set it as a goal, you'd set it as a goal, but then you'd either hit it or you wouldn't. And it's very finite. And this actually often decreases the motivation for human beings over time. So goals are finite, and they often already hold a culture, which is your first bullet point there. And what that means is that human beings usually already have a culture around setting their goals. Now, you might be nodding your head already and going, I know where he's going with this. You see, once you have set your goal, you probably have a cultural relationship to that goal by either underachieve. In other words, you set a goal and you know you're going to underachieve it. You're not going to reach it. And therefore, you set it so high that when you come in underneath it, you've achieved enough that you're comfortable. That's one way you could do it. The second way that we see human beings relate to their goals is that they achieve their goals and then they stop. So they land on them and then stop. And they go, well, I achieved my goal. Time to take a holiday or vacation for the rest of the week or the month or the year. That's the second relationship people have to goals. The third relationship people often have to goals is that they need to keep going and they reach the goal and then they become overachievers. So they go, oh, I got to my goal, but I'm just going to keep going and see how far I can go with the extra time I have. So you either are an underachiever, a land and stopper, or an overachiever. Now, either way, just to be honest, when you work with a goal, it's not the most useful way to work with a target. So needle movers help you set an operating range. And what that means is you actually set three different targets. You set what we call a minimum. Okay, and the minimum is the minimum that you are willing to achieve to be okay, sustainable, survivable in whatever you're doing. Then you set a target. This is the actual target that you want to hit. The third number you set is what we call a mind blower. Now, naturally, the minimum is going to be smaller than the target. The target will be smaller than the mind blower. So let me give you an example. If you were going to set a needle mover for your income for the year, let's say you set that you want to earn a minimum of $75,000, a target of 100 and a mind blower of 150,000. And this was now your operating range. This range for the mind actually allows everybody to play effectively, the underachievers, the lander and stoppers, and the overachievers. And it always gives you the experience of having a range to play within. It gives you a game. And so what I want you to be doing is I want you to set your annual needle movers, your quarterly, and your monthly needle movers. Let me explain how this works. So your needle movers are not always about your income. They could be about achieving things. Maybe you have a needle mover around getting your online campaigns going or your website up, or maybe you have a certain amount of meetings you want to create in a week, or maybe you want to do a couple of speaking engagements a month. And so a needle mover for your annual amount of speaking engagements might be minimum of 15, target of 24, maximum of 30. That might be something that you set. Here's what I'd like you to do for your needle movers. I want you to go through and set your annual needle movers for at least five areas of your business. Revenue should definitely be one of those needle movers. However, you've got four other needle movers, and you could set an infinite amount. Okay, it doesn't matter how many needle movers you create. We notice normally corporations and corporate groups that I work with, executives usually set between three and seven needle movers. So we'll just call it five on average. And what that means is they go through the most important things they need to track and pay attention to for the year. Of course, revenue is always among those. And then they also track other things like either productivity or getting certain, you know, getting new clients on board or getting certain projects out the door or products launched. You get to decide, but set your annual needle movers first. Then, just like our, you know, plan it and work backwards, you're going to then divide those into your quarterly needle movers. Once you know what you want to achieve in the year, you get to just divide them into the quarterly and plan for them, and then down to the monthly. Now, this allows you to create weekly games to achieve your monthly needle movers. Now, how does this help your cash flow? Well, it looks like this. We have noticed over the years with working with business owners that when they actually set their needle movers and they're clear about what they're trying to achieve and they're tracking that and working with it on a weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual basis, that they actually increase all of their cash flow throughout the month. Why? Because they're very focused on a specific game. So if you haven't set your games and your specific targets, if you don't have them posted in your office, if you're not present to them on a daily and weekly basis, because guess what? What you get annually gives you your quarterly targets. What you get quarterly gives you your monthly targets. That helps you understand what you need to do weekly. And of course, that means every day you're clear about exactly what you need to do to achieve the cash flow. So just raise up your targets if you want more cash flow and then focus on achieving that every single day. Okay, jump over to way number two. This is called get someone to whip you. And I'm sure a lot of you have a great visual around that. But this is a pretty simple one. I will go through this pretty quickly. But it essentially points to the fact that most people do not have accountability partners. Many people are not actually very accountable, and to be honest, being accountable to yourself is one of the worst people you can be accountable to in general in your entire life, especially in your business. So there's a little known fact that when we raise people's accountability on teams, we actually see a pretty good bump in cash flow. Why? Just because everything that we're doing in a business that's related to cash flow, the more accountable we become to getting it done, the faster our cash flow comes pouring in, the bigger our revenue becomes, and the more money we actually make. So this might seem a little bit mundane, but actually, you probably don't have an accountability partner that you meet with. And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to look at raising your accountability on all of your activities, and you're going to watch your revenue soar. Here's how we do it. We get a weekly accountability partner that you talk with. And this is what we do, and I have this myself, where essentially I have a weekly accountability partner that I work with. I do a 30-minute call every week with this partner, and even if you've heard somebody talk about this before, if you've heard me talk about this before, if you don't have an accountability partner that you talk with on a weekly basis, it's time to get one. You do a 30-minute, just a quick call with them once a week, same time every week, where you share essentially what you're promising, what you're committed to getting done, and you share about what got done last week and what didn't get done. And it is, look, it's literally, it's a quick session, 15 minutes apiece. And what do you do with it? Your accountability partner is not supposed to coach you through things. It's specifically just someone that you're going to be talking to, that you're going to hold yourself more accountable. If you have to get on the phone with somebody and share with them what you promised and what you did, guess what will happen? You're going to get a lot more done because you're going to feel, by peer pressure alone, weird about getting on the phone saying, oh, I didn't do this. Oh, I didn't do that. And even if that's what you're saying week after week, guess what? You're going to start to get present to how much you promise getting done in your business and how little you're actually getting done. So if we raise your accountability, we're going to literally see your revenue soar. And so what I'd like you to be doing is getting an accountability partner, set up a weekly reporting system where you're essentially every week you got the promises you're making to get done for the week. You get back on the phone with that accountability partner every week and you share with them what got done, what didn't get done, and why it didn't get done. And you put the integrity back into the structure of your business by saying what you're going to get done again the following week. It's a straight ahead accountability structure. And if you tried that on for literally 1 month, and then you got on the forum, you share with me what it was like for you, I guarantee you'll actually see a big change in your productivity, in your revenue, and in your overall cash flow. Flip over to way three. Way three is about creating rewards and consequence structures for yourself. And although you may know about this as well, oh, by the way, I'll add in one quick thing backwards on your accountability structure with your partner, and this will also go into rewards and consequences. There's a little game that I play with my accountability partner. Whereas if I ever say, I know I should be doing that, I know, the words are, I know I owe that person $100. Now, why do we do this? We do this because it's so easy for human beings to create their promises or set up rewards for themselves or consequences and then to let the structure go out or get loose. And that is essentially what makes things fall apart, is losing the tight structure. You know, I love to equate things back to the lessons I'm learning about raising my son, right? You know, children, of course, or at least my son, I'm sure this is common for most children, go through different phases. And as they mature and grow, you have to kind of keep recreating the new structures and helping them evolve, right? And I just continue to learn in raising him that the tighter the structures, the more I keep the container, the procedures, the rules, the accountability structures, the more I kind of keep a structure with him, the happier he is, the better he is, and the way, more everything works out. If I, for example, start to let bedtime slide to a half hour, hour later, then the next day is a mess. And so it just brings us back to the point that the more structures you have in place for yourself, actually the happier you are. Even though human beings think that if they're more structured, that they're more trapped, it's actually the other way around. And we're going to talk about this actually when we get into some later conversations here about structures and expanding to our structures. But either way, this is the point. When you say, I know, to your accountability partner, you owe them £100, 100 euros, or $100, depending on what currency you're in. And the reason you do that is because it keeps you even more accountable to not just going, oh, I know I should be doing that. Oh, I knew I should have done that. Who cares what you know? We don't care about what you know. We care about what's in your bank account, the way you're impacting the world, and the results that you're producing. So when it comes to your rewards and consequence structures, way number three here, the first thing is I want you to actually design rewards and consequence structures for yourself. You see, most business owners don't even have rewards or consequences. Now, what is that? That means that when you achieve something on a weekly basis, and let's keep it to a weekly basis, you could have little rewards for yourself each day if you'd like. And we've worked with a lot of teams that have done that. I'm okay with that, but I primarily want to have a weekly reward that you work towards, a monthly reward, a quarterly reward, and an annual reward. This means you're always moving towards something that you're rewarding yourself around. And if you're a man listening to this call, we know from history and from our experience that typically men are particularly bad at ever rewarding themselves or ever creating rewards. They just think they should be doing it anyways. This is part of our world as a man. We just take care of things. We get them done. We don't need any rewards or any pats on the back. Well, let's put that aside because actually, as it turns out, even men are incentivized well by rewards. But there's the other side of this, which is the consequences. So if you don't achieve something, what are the consequences you have for yourself? So what are some good examples of rewards and consequences? Look, a daily reward could be something, you know, as little as taking a 15-minute walk around the park or walk around your building or go enjoying yourself doing something for 15 minutes, like, you know, going and listening to your favorite song out in the car or going, you know, putting on some music for 15 minutes and dancing around the office, whatever is fun for you. I want it to be healthy though. Okay. So don't do the reward if I get a lot done is I get to go eat 10 donuts or I get to go drink, you know, 3 more coffees. Like, let's make it a positive and supportive for the health of your mind, your body, and your soul and the reward. Okay. What could be a reward for the week? Well, look, maybe you've got a new book, a new CD or a new, a new theater play that you want to go to. And so if you achieve all your targets for the week, you get to buy yourself that sort of thing. You get to set up the rewards and whatever is appropriate for you. But it's got to feel like it really incentivizes you. What are some consequences? Well, consequences can be anything that you don't like, and you need to set them up for yourself. I actually suggest that a consequence, which is a big one that usually motivates people away from pain, is that you have to do something for someone else. That's a big one. You could do it out of money, right? So if you don't achieve your actual goals or your targets for the week, rather you should say your needle movers, since we're going to use that language. If you don't achieve your needle movers for the day or for the week, maybe you have to pay in some money to a pot or to a charity, okay? So we need rewards and consequence structures, and you can choose the ones for yourself. I'd love you to choose these this week, and I'd love for you to post them on the forum. Let us know what you're actually choosing as rewards and consequence structures so others in the group can actually get a sense of what are you doing with your rewards and consequences. So the second line here in your slide is incentivize yourself like a real sales team would. Okay, look, people are, they work well towards pleasure and away from pain, and every good corporation incentivizes its sales team because sales and revenue is, of course, the lifeblood of the company. So they incentivize the sales teams through rewards and consequences. Let's do it yourself. So you must create consequences. This is the third line. You must create consequences for not reaching your targets. And I have that in there specifically because so many people that they don't even create rewards and consequences, or they tend to just create rewards and they don't actually have any consequences. We need both of them, okay? It's the carrot and the stick. We need to move towards pleasure and away from pain. Now, here is the key. You got it? Here is the key to this whole thing working. You need to have somebody else officiate your follow through, okay? This is why the accountability partner goes so well hand in hand with this one. Because again, you do not really want to be the one that's actually deciding whether you're going to follow through with your reward or consequence. There's nothing easier than letting things slide or not doing, not actually doing the consequence. I'll just let this one go. Or certainly not rewarding yourself, right? I just did a good job and I should have done that anyways. I'll get to the reward later. So we need somebody else to officiate that. And that is where your accountability partner becomes very, very, very powerful for you. Flip over to way number 4. And this is where I want you to consider adding a new revenue stream to increase cash flow in your business. And I'm going to give you a couple of ideas. Now, you might be doing some of these already, but you might not be. And that's what this entire training is about, is helping you find new ways that you haven't been doing. And I would actually bet if you're listening, there's probably tons of ideas. But in this slide, I'm hoping you'll pull at least one, which is if you are currently working in a market that's either a done-for-you market or a do-it-yourself market, I want you to consider expanding into the other market. So expand into either the done-for-you market or the DIY, the do-it-yourself sectors. What does that mean? That means that your business might be primarily helping people out or serving them. In other words, fixing their problems. And many business owners usually start off in a done-for-you service, or their product is essentially a done-for-you product. The done-for-you product or service essentially means you're just solving a problem or fixing something for somebody. So what's an example? If you're a financial advisor, for example, and you invest people's money for them, or you help you may help them make decisions, this is a done-for-you service. You do it for them. They don't understand how to invest, so they give you the money to go invest it for them, and you're doing a done-for-you service. Another thing might be an accountant. If you're an accountant and you're doing, you know, small business taxes, for example, you're doing it for people. However, you're not actually playing in the do-it-yourself sector, which is where people want to learn about how you do what you do. Now, that could mean training other people in your same profession. So if you're an accountant, you could be training accountants that have less experience than you on how to do a specific task or come up with a specific outcome. You could be training them and hosting some events or seminars or webinars or teleconferences and training other accountants. Now, you could also be training the people that hire you as a done-for-you service who might want to actually learn how to do it themselves. So, for example, you're listening to this, and this is a do-it-yourself engagement, right? You're learning how to do these things yourself. I'm teaching you. I teach you what I do. I have expertise, experience. I've made mistakes, had successes, and you want to learn from those things. So we're in a do-it-yourself market. Now, I engage all of my businesses in both the DFY and the DIY sectors, the done-for-you and the do-it-yourself sectors. And whenever I had noticed that we were heading towards one or we were really focused on one, I usually asked our CEOs to immediately expand into the other. Now, this is going to immediately double the amount of markets you can play within. And look, it will take a little bit of startup time, but not much. And the great part about this is that when you add an advice or an info division to your business, when you start, you know, delivering advice or information in terms of like a do-it-yourself sector, it's one of the cheapest type of divisions to add because it doesn't take anything more than you taking your knowledge and your wisdom and your experience out of your head and putting it into teaching materials, products, and services that people can then pay you for. So that's your second bullet point there, is add an advice or information division to your business. Now realize if you're already in the advice industry, if you're already an expert, you're in the expert industry, then maybe the first one's more interesting to you. Are you doing work in the done-for-you market, and are you doing work in the DIY market? If not, if you quickly expanded into those, you would immediately give yourself new revenue streams for higher cash flow. The next idea that you can do is you can start to moonlight. What is moonlighting? Moonlighting means, look, I don't know if you use this in any other industry, but I've heard this in the medical industry where doctors tend to moonlight as a consultant. And what that means is, I'll give you an example. My brother, who's a surgeon, he's an interventional radiologist. Well, at nights on the weekends, he reads x-rays for other hospitals as a consultant. He's a contractor, and he reads x-rays from his home. He moonlights, and he makes extra money doing this, and he loves it. So this has become actually one of, you know, a great new revenue stream for him that he started in the last few years. And we were sitting around talking about how he can increase cash flow, you know, obviously, and work less, because obviously as a doctor and a surgeon, he does fine. But he was working so much. He was, you know, at the hospital like 18, 20 hours a day. And he was thinking, how can I continue to increase my income without having to work more? So he reduced his hours at the hospital a bit, and he started moonlighting. And because he was moonlighting as a consultant or as a contractor, he could then increase his cash flow. Now, you can do the exact same thing. Where could you moonlight as a consultant, coach, as a paid-for speaker, called a keynote speaker, or as a trainer or educator? Now, if you're already doing this consulting, coaching, speaking, and training, I understand. Then we go back to the how do we differentiate into different sectors for you. And the last type of revenue stream you might want to consider is maybe you can consider starting an after-hours side business. Now, this means that there might be a business that you could run after hours. What are after hours? Well, mostly it's usually 7 to 12 p.m. in the evening, or, you know, 7 to, you know, whatever, you go to sleep, or weekends. You probably have your main business, and perhaps you could have a second smaller business that's easy to generate on the side. I say that because I don't want to distract you from your main business. However, there have been times when I've been running businesses, or I should say running a business, one business, and I wasn't really happy enough with the amount of revenue that was coming in from it. So I started a little side business at night, usually consulting, coaching, because it's nice and simple and easy to get clients. It's not very time consuming, not a lot of preparation needed. And I was starting to coach at nights and on the weekends. That added some extra cash flow. another thing that I was doing is I looked at all my talents. What are all your talents? What could you be doing in contracting with all of your talents? Well, I was a musician, right? So while I was building a media company, in the first couple of years, we weren't necessarily doing, you know, a huge amounts of money, and what we were reinvesting in the company. So I was looking for more ways to increase my cash flow. Well, I was playing piano in the evenings at, you know, some bars and hotels and different places, 8 to 10 p.m., four nights a week, would go in and play once on the weekend, and I was end up making an extra, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 a month just playing and performing. So how can we use other talents to maybe start a separate side business and bring in some more cash? Okay, flip over to the next one. Way number five. We call this the need for speed. So here is one of the best secrets in increasing your success, and it's increasing the speed at which you get things done. You know, I had a mentor of mine one time, was a venture capitalist, who said, you know, Kane, people always say you can either have it good, cheap, or quick, but you can't have it all three. And I used to think, well, why can't you have all three? Why can't you have it good quality, have it quickly, and have it cheaply? And that was actually one of the focus that we put our entire business model on with our media business. And specifically, I used to continue to look at how do we make it cheaper, better, and faster all at the same time, which many people think is impossible or counterintuitive. But one of the areas we really noticed changed our overall cash and revenue in the business was when we literally just sped things up. Well, why? Well, when I put some attention on making things a lot faster, including closing clients, including getting the projects done faster so that we could invoice quicker, we, of course, increased the amount of money coming through the business. So let's look at a set of details around how to increase the speed. Human beings will expand to our containers. Therefore, as it turns out, if you start creating a smaller set of timelines to get things done in, you'll actually, yes, you'll increase some of the pressure, but just make it a game. You don't have to make it, you know, over the top stressful for yourself. Just play a game to see how fast you can get things done. And I will give a little bit of a global perspective here, being American, where, you know, Americans are very much, there's this ingrained saying in our culture that time is money, time is money, time is money, right? We've got that in our culture. We grow up with that. And so velocity or speed is a very important part of moving through business. Now, having traveled the world, I also see that a lot of other cultures are a lot, they focus a lot more on quality and sacrifice speed. In other words, they say, well, look, we're more interested in having a higher quality product than getting it done fast and having a lower quality product. Understandable, completely respectable. However, what I have noticed is that in coaching people, that I've been able to usually increase the velocity at which they get things done a lot faster than they ever believed they could. And so the concept that human beings expand to our containers means our timeline. If you give yourself a day to get something done, guess what? It will take you a day to get it done. And if you give yourself an hour to get it done, you will get it done. Now, I know what you're saying as well, but what about the quality? And I get it. But here's the thing. Your quality bar is usually 10 times higher than your customers or your clients. And that's something that was very, very difficult for me to get over, because I you know, I have a very high quality bar on everything I do. And I would say, for example, when I produce videos and I produce training materials, you know, I could spend 5-6 hours on just, you know, editing my videos and making sure everything's perfect. And I have this huge quality bar. When I used to work with my photographer, when we would travel the world and we would shoot pictures, and we would spend hours editing and making them perfect. And I would then hand them off to my other business partners or, our marketing teams. And they'd be like, great, they look great. And they would have been happier with something that only took us an hour to get done. So the second bullet point here is give yourself set times to achieve things. In other words, start setting specific time frames that you're going to get something done in. You're going to sit down and do some paperwork, set your time, look at your watch, maybe set a timer. Give yourself 30 minutes to get it done. You're going to do some invoicing, give yourself 15 minutes to get it done. You're going to create a little blurb for your marketing, for your website, give yourself, you know, 20 minutes to get it done. Set a timer. And I know you might think this is crazy, or like managing your day like that might be ridiculous, but do it for a week and see what happens. And of course, design your rewards and consequence structures around these achievements. So if you achieve it in the set time, give yourself a little reward. And this might be where you give yourself little daily rewards. And I don't know why, but I keep thinking of daily rewards as like the chocolate. So if you give yourself chocolate as daily reward, make sure it's raw and low in sugar so you're not eating sugar all day long. But anyways, you get the point. You got to set up rewards and consequences for achieving your set times and just shorten it down. So increase the velocity of every aspect of your business. And this is the challenge I want to ask you to go into this week. My challenge to you is look at every aspect of your business, everything you do, and look at and choose to get it done faster. How can you increase the velocity of it? Take some conscious awareness time and look at how you can increase the velocity of it. The next way to increase your speed is to automate. See what you can start to automate. And we've talked a little bit about this before, but dig in this time and really look at what can you get automated. And the funny thing is that when you automate, yes, I know usually it slows you down first to get the whole system in place to speed you up. And I am okay with and support you in having to slow down a little bit with the essence of speeding up. But see if you can, with velocity, slow down. In other words, can you get it done quickly? Can you get the automation done quickly? You can also find new vendors. You know, maybe your vendors are too slow. And I'll tell you, I hear about this all the time with graphic designers. My private clients are working with graphic designers or coders in their marketing that take forever. If you've got a vendor that takes forever, time to get rid of them and look for a new vendor. This includes, the next thing is to reduce your time wasters. This is a very easy way to increase your speed. So if you notice that you waste a lot of time during the day in certain areas, start to pay attention to it. That's the question you want to answer. Where do you waste the most amount of time? And I don't care who you are, how brilliant you are, how amazing you are at business. There's somewhere you're wasting time. That could actually be in the transition from one project to the next. I'll explain what I mean. So maybe you're not someone who plays on Facebook all day long and gets distracted. Maybe you're someone who stays pretty focused. Now, if you're not, that could be a huge time waster area to look for. But let's say you're pretty focused. Well, I've noticed a lot of people when they're transitioning from one project to the next end up wasting a lot of time. They get done with something and they're like, okay, I need to recuperate. And that's okay. I mean, recuperation is great, of course, right? But they get on Facebook and they start playing around in their recuperation, and a half hour later, they've wasted 30 minutes. Or they go out and they go, I'm gonna go take a quick walk around the block, get some fresh air, and just get out and take a little break, recuperate, and they go out for a 5 or 7 minute walk. It turns into 25, 30, 45 minutes. So we need to keep things succinct. We need to keep things velocitous, and we need to keep things time-bound. So here's another suggestion. I want you to move all non-revenue-generating activities to after hours. What does this mean? This means that all activities that you do that are not specific to generate revenue, and I mean things like, you know, if you're putting things into your accounting software, if you are working on automating, you know, your marketing, those are non-revenue-generating activities. Things like marketing, getting on the phones, calling people, creating meetings, invoicing, getting your services or your products done, getting proposals out the door. Those are revenue-generating activities. Now, you could say that everything is revenue-generating in a business because everything has to get done. But you know the things that are really the most, let's say, low revenue-generating. And if you want a better criteria, notice the time between that activity and money coming in from that activity. So this is a way you could prioritize your you know, which activities you're doing. How long from the time that you actually do that activity does money come in from that activity? For example, if you're entering receipts into your accounting software, or if you're reconciling your credit cards, or you're paying bills, for example, well, I'm sorry, but there is no revenue that comes in from paying your bills. I realize that if you don't pay your bills, your lights will turn off and you won't be able to run your business. But you should be doing those. I'm not saying don't do those things. I'm just saying you should be doing those things after hours or on the weekends or at a time when you cannot be doing marketing and sales. So let's prioritize marketing and sales as the top revenue generating activities. Now, do you need to actually get stuff done? Like, do you need to produce the products or the services? To be honest, I would love for you to be outsourcing that as much as possible. And maybe you build that into your price points so that you can be focusing on marketing and sales. Remember that you only make money when you sell something. And of course, the second half of that is you only make money when you invoice for it. So we need to be marketing and selling as much as possible and keeping high quality, having someone else produce the product or the service as much as possible. And you're going, well, how can I do that, Kane, if I'm actually the service? Well, I get it. So you will have to you'll have to generate revenue through doing some of your own services. But we want to be very focused on getting back to marketing and sales as quickly as possible. The last strategy for increasing your speed is to practice urgency factors with all of your clients and in all of your meetings. Now, what does that mean? It means start creating and coming up with urgency factors or urgency reasons, reasons they need to take action quickly. Before you go into a meeting, make sure you write down one or two urgency factors. That means that at some point you're going to say, look, guys, we need to make a decision the next couple days because of X. And whatever X could be, it could be because I've got other options on the table and I need to decide. Because I've got other decision makers and they need to make a decision. Because I've got a set of investors and I need to go back to them with a decision. So start to practice urgency factors in which you are helping every meeting, every interaction, and everything you do move faster. Okay, jump over to way number six. And this is our map, M&A and P. And now I will reveal to you what it is, which is mergers and acquisitions and partners. Now, you may have never considered or thought about mergers and acquisitions. Typically, people don't even think of a merger or an acquisition as a potential strategy for themselves to increase their size of their company or revenue until they're much bigger. And look, there are certainly a lot of larger companies do mergers and acquisitions, but you can consider the same theory in a small business and potentially use the strategy to get ahead, create more revenue, and create more cash flow for yourself. So let's consider, you know, let's start with a merger. So what's a merger? A merger is when you bring two companies together to benefit a bigger, a bigger mission, right? So you can take two companies, put them together, and make a bigger pie than they are alone. So what if you considered merging with a larger firm in your own industry? Potentially, you could bring your talents, your customers, your ideas, and merge into a larger firm that's creating more revenue and take an equity stake or a piece of that larger firm that will immediately increase your revenue or your cash flow. The second area you could consider would be the acquisition, and perhaps you could acquire a company that has cash flow producing assets. Now, if you think you need a lot of capital to do that, well, hang on, because I'm not necessarily suggesting you go out and, you know, spend millions of dollars or millions of pounds or raise, you know, millions of euros for that. I'm just suggesting that you might actually consider looking at acquiring another smaller company that has cash flow producing assets. What does that mean? It means that you could actually be bringing in another company that has something that's cash flowing already, and you could acquire them through giving them shares or stocks in your company. Now, it depends on how large your company is, of course, but even if you're a small service provider, you could acquire other small service providers and give them some sort of equity stake in your business as an acquisition. So it's essentially the sort of the opposite of the merger idea where somebody acquires you or you merge in with a firm. Here you could be acquiring someone else and be giving them equity in your business. What are cash flow producing assets? Well, you know, and from a service business, maybe you acquire in a set of IP, a set of intellectual property, products and services that somebody else has built that maybe they have some of their brand already built in the marketplace. And you're thinking, well, why would somebody want to do that with me? Well, here's why. Because they could be getting to a point where they don't want to put in the same kind of effort into that business anymore. Maybe they want to retire. Maybe they want to move on to another business or do something else. And so if you just kind of keep your eyes and your ears open about possibly acquiring another company that has some good cash flow producing assets, you could easily acquire those assets and give them a little, you could even give them, it's almost like a consignment kind of thing. You could even give them a percentage of sales on just their assets. It's almost like what we talked about last time in selling other people's products and services, but this would actually be acquiring the company and owning it if you wanted to do that. And the last suggestions around mergers and acquisitions and partners is you could bring in a business partner into your business that already has cash flowing production clients, cash flow producing clients rather. And this is different than just having a business partner, and here's why. The key difference is having a business partner that already has cash flow producing clients. And again, you might say, well, why would somebody want to do that? Well, again, for lots of reasons. And you know, everything is possible. And I've found that any type of variation or combination of things that you want actually exists in the world. You just need to start asking for it. I did this again with my media company. So one of the things that I did to increase the cash flow of my media company was I looked for a business partner that could come in and start a new division for us that already had clients, and I brought them in under our business. Now, we were a little bit more established. You know, we weren't necessarily a startup or just a service business. We had a little bit more momentum. We had some clients. We were a service business. We were providing services. But we brought in this business partner who had a whole set of clientele that was already cash flowing. We asked for a percentage of their cash flow in exchange for an equity stake in our business. Now, what did that do? It boosted our cash flow in our business. It boosted the money in our pockets, and we were able to do a lot more with that money in the immediate future instead of having to wait to earn all that money ourselves over time. Okay, jump over to way number 7, and I call this invest in an ATM machine. What does that mean? Well, look, I believe one of the best ways to increase revenue and cash in your pocket is to have your money start making money. I mean, why not put those things to work? It's kind of like I say to my son, I say, look, you're turning 5. He's turning 5 years old. And I say, yeah, look, you know, we're starting to give him some pocket money. He gets money once a week to buy things for himself. And he just discovered that he wants to buy more than he has. Starting to get into that world. He's like, nah, he's like, I want to buy an electric toothbrush. And I say, well, how much is it? He says, it's 12 euro. And I said, well, how much do you have in your bank? He says, 7 euro. And I said, all right, cool. Listen, all you need to do is just start up your business and go start earning a little more money. You can have it quicker. He says, no, I'll wait till next week, Dad. Thanks. So I think your money should start making money. And what that means is that you should be investing in cash flow generating investments. So what are you doing with your money? People can do essentially one of two things with their money in relationship to this conversation. They can either spend it and buy things that depreciate, or they can invest and buy things that appreciate. Now, that's a little bit of the equity play, right? If you invest in a piece of real estate and it increases in equity, you have more value in it. But I'm actually talking about, what about investing in things that are cash flow generating investments? So what could that be? Well, look, that could be stocks. That could be things in the markets that are paying out quarterly dividends. You could be investing in potentially mutual funds or ETFs or things in the markets. And by no means am I giving any advice. So if that's not the right thing for you, that's okay. But it's something to consider. You could also potentially be investing in things like, you know, vending machines, which is a business, but it still could be considered a cash flowing investment. You could be investing in things like storage units. You could be investing in mobile home parks and mobile homes. Anything that's going to be generating cash flow that you could be renting. So that is essentially what I want you to think about. What assets could you be buying that you could be renting? Hey, what assets do you have around the house that you could be going out and renting? I mean, this might be ridiculous to you, but maybe not. Maybe you could be renting your car out on the weekends, because maybe you live in a city and you don't go anywhere on the weekends. You hang out in your city. Or vice versa. Maybe you work all week long in the city and you go out on the weekends. So maybe you could be car sharing or renting your car out. Now, that might be ridiculous, but there's actually entire businesses that do this kind of thing. So start looking around and thinking about, what type of assets do you have or could you invest in that could start generating cash flow for you? And the last suggestion I have for you around actually investing in an ATM machine is, instead of investing money, if you don't have money or you're not in a position to invest money, what about investing your time? And, you know, how do you do this? Well, I do this actually with a lot of businesses. It's the way I leverage out investing into different businesses without having to come up with the cash. So I invest my time into advising other businesses. I sit on many different advisory boards of different businesses, and those businesses then give me some sort of percentage of revenue for the year. It's usually a percentage of the equity, but the equity is usually equal to the percentage that they're paying me. Well, even if it's 1 or 2 or 3 or 4%, which is very small, I also have a very small amount of time investment. So I could sit on 10 or 15 different boards, or if we want to, you know, make it smaller, you could even say 3 or 5 different boards. I actually sit on 8 different boards right now. In the past, I have sat on up to 12 different boards, you know, throughout the year, just depending on my time commitment and what they were asking me for. But, you know, you've generated a lot of value, knowledge, wisdom, resources, information, and you could be on somebody's advisory team getting paid throughout the year, just advising them and meeting with them at their advisory meetings. That might be once a month. It might be twice a month. I don't recommend you getting involved more than twice a month, or it starts to become essentially a coaching job. But if you were advising them and getting, you know, 2% cash flow out of their business every month, and you do want to actually get paid either monthly or quarterly as an advisor, I don't recommend getting paid annually. I think it's a little bit risky in case the business is not doing well. You want to be getting paid for your time. But this is a way that you can utilize your time. I don't care who you are, how much experience you have in business or your industry, your business. There's somebody that is starting out or not as farther down the road or doesn't have quite as much experience that would love to have you on their advisory board and give you a percentage of their income in order for you to help them. Okay, jump over to way number 8, just a few left on the 20 ways to increase your revenue. I call this license what you got, baby. And this is where I want you to consider actually creating a licensing or franchising opportunity out of what you have. So you have a lot of knowledge and information. You probably have systems. Maybe you have products. Maybe you, that's what you do. You sell a product and your product has a system. Well, what about licensing that system or that product development to some other company or some other individual that would love to go out and sell it and pay you a licensing fee for it? You could do this licensing idea, or you could consider franchising your business. Now, if you're in an experts business, if you're in a service business, you're going to want to think more licensing versus franchising, obviously. And if you're in a product business, you could definitely start to think franchising. Now, I don't want to downplay franchising. There is an element of time and effort into the franchising, so you have to decide whether it's the right thing for you. Licensing is quite a bit easier because you don't have to necessarily set up all of the systems. You have to set up some of the systems. And although licensing and franchising are similar, typically franchising will deal with more of a retail or a physical franchise. Not always, but it typically does. But consider whether it's a good time for you to start licensing or franchising your brand or products or services, which essentially leads us to the next idea, which is have others reselling your products for you. We talked earlier in the revenue in the 20 Ways to Increase Your Revenue training on how you could be reselling other people's products. You could be bringing in high converting products and selling theirs. But we could be also having other people or other affiliates or other salespeople or other businesses reselling your products for you. So where are you distributing your products currently? Could you be increasing the distribution of your products into other vendors, other retail shops, or having affiliates or other people on the street reselling your services or products? The last suggestion I would have around essentially license what you got is, what if you found partners that wanted to take your product into new markets for you? So for example, I often say you are more valuable in other territories than your own. What does that mean? It means you're exotic, right? And if you're exotic, you by design will be more interesting to that market. If you're a bigger fish in a smaller pond, you're always more interesting. Well, I don't know, maybe you've never thought about taking your ideas, products, or services into foreign markets. I mean, maybe even smaller markets like a Brazil, something in South America, or maybe in Eastern Europe, or some places in Africa, or you know, maybe parts of Asia. And maybe they're not even native English speakers. I'm assuming you're a native English speaker if you're listening to this. So perhaps you'd want to start to find bilingual partners that like to import products and services from around the world that could help bring more cash flow into your business by taking your products or services and putting them into these new markets. That is actually, I love that. And one of the first things I do, if I'm not going to expand personally into other markets, which is, by the way, why I love the experts business and information divisions. I know if you have a product business out there, you might be going, but I'm not an expert. But if you have a product, you can still add information divisions. You can expand into the do-it-yourself market. And the great thing about information divisions is you can put it online and you can have the whole world seeing it. Now, many times I have partners that take our stuff and translate it into other languages and run with it in other countries and pay us licensing fees. Flip over to way number 9, and this is where we look at shifting your staff to commission only. Now, I always get a lot of pushback from this and people saying, but hold it, why would people want to work for me for commission only? Well, it doesn't hurt to try, doesn't hurt to ask, and I've seen a lot of businesses use this technique of ours to shift over from a high overhead business to a low overhead, high commission. This also allows you to expand if you don't have a lot of capital and start bringing in more revenue and more money into your business. So one of the things that we switched our media company over to a long time ago, which was great, was a performance-based pay. And we actually gave everyone in the company a small percentage of ownership in the business. Now, this actually came out of an observation that I had of a company that I was working with. It was a seminar company. And it was a seminar company, it was called Landmark. And Landmark actually had given their entire company to all of their employees. And every employee had a percentage of ownership in the business. I thought it was a brilliant idea. Now, it has its, you know, of course, it has its advantages and it has its disadvantages, but it was brilliant and it worked like a charm for them. So we decided to try that in a couple of our own businesses. And performance-based pay means essentially that the people get paid at the company based upon the performance of the company. Now, that means that they have to have a clear and direct, trackable, and tangible connection to the results of the overall business so that they can actually feel that they have an impact on their pay. I mean, if they don't feel like they have an impact on their pay, then that's going to be a problem. They're going to feel helpless. But if you base it on the performance, and I don't mean just necessarily their performance, but the performance of the company, now you could do both, right? You could cut people's pay down, but give them bonuses based upon the performance of the success of the business. And you could give them the opportunity to earn even more money on a performance basis than they would if they were on a flat rate. And that's really why it works. I mean, if you're just going to go in and cut someone's salary out, they're going to be like, hey, man, what are you doing? But if you say, well, look, I actually want to reduce the overhead here in order to reinvest. And although it's a bit more of a risk, you actually have a higher opportunity to create more money for yourself based upon getting a percentage of the overall. Now, what is that? It's essentially a percentage of pay and the overall revenue for the year, right? So you could be paying people on how much the business is making. You could also be giving everyone a small percentage of ownership in the business. So each employee, especially if you're a smaller business, you could be giving them a small percentage or shares in the business. And my suggestion on that is that you don't necessarily just start handing out equity or shares in your business, but that you actually let them vest over time. What that means is that if you give them, let's say, 2% of the business, it vests at like 0.25% over each year that they're there. That way, the longer they are there, the more they perform. There's got to be, you know, actual criteria to how they get that equity. But that kind of stuff often allows them to reduce their pay because they're having an opportunity to have a smaller part of a bigger pie. And usually people love to have a smaller part of a bigger pie than a bigger part of a smaller pie. The last suggestion I would recommend on commission is really look for sales staff that are commission only based. And this means that it might be time to start to bring in salespeople to help you sell because perhaps you're maybe not the best salesperson, or maybe you're just stretched thin because you've got to actually deliver the product or service. And it's time to start looking for commission only salespeople. Now, I know what you're going to say as soon as I say commission only salespeople is that, well, Kane, good salespeople don't work for commission only. Well, that's not necessarily true. I would say experienced, older, and maybe men or women that have families to support don't tend to like to only work on commission only, although there are plenty that I've hired over the years that work on commission only. But maybe you want to look for younger, more driven, kind of willing to take a little bit more risk commission only salespeople. And they may not be quite as trained, but maybe that's part of what you do is you help them become better in sales and they give you their time commission only. It's a little bit of a risk, of course. You don't want to just hire anybody because you could end up wasting a lot of time with people that don't know how to sell. But having the right personality and someone who's really driven and aggressive and wants to make a lot of themselves and make a lot of money, especially a young person, maybe someone in university who wants to have a side job or someone fresh out of university who just wants to get started and get some momentum and get some experience, they could be a perfect person to bring on as a commission-only salesperson. Okay, way number 10, the last of the official 20 ways to increase your revenue before we get to our bonus way. I call this use all of your assets. And here's what I mean. 3 suggestions on how to use all of your assets to increase your cash flow and revenue. So you have equity in your business. And so you could sell equity in your business to an investor. Why would they want to do that? Well, they're investing in your business just like we talked about earlier. And you can invest in a business obviously through time and getting money back as an advisor, or you can simply buy into a business. And there are actually a lot of people who would love to take their money and buy into your business in order to get annual cash flow. I mean, it's essentially very similar to getting a dividend from a stock on a quarterly basis if you're paying them quarterly. Now, even if you're a small service business, you can still sell equity in your business. You just say, hey, I'm taking 5, 10, 20, 30, whatever you want. I wouldn't give more than 49% so you don't become a minority shareholder in your own business. But you could give away up to 49% to investors. Now, you have to obviously give them the cash flow, but that would bring in a lot of revenue for you depending on how much you sold it for. The next suggestion I have around bringing in more revenue around using your assets is factor your receivables. And a lot of self-employed individuals, they've never even heard of this. If you know this, then you probably know where I'm going with it, which is factoring your receivables essentially means you have people that owe you money. And there are places, there are debt collection services, and there are groups that will buy your receivables for a smaller amount in order to expedite how much money you get up front. Okay, so how does this work? So here's how it works. It works by, let's say you are owed 50,000 pounds, euros, or dollars, okay? And you go to a place that factors receivables, and they say, look, we will give you X amount of money right now, and then we will then collect the money that your clients owe you directly to us. Now, they're obviously not going to give you 100% because they would have some risk around not collecting everything, and they'd have some risk around you not delivering. So certain businesses, of course, have a higher likelihood of being able to factor their receivables, but every business could do this because anybody who's interested in you know, basically becoming a bank loves this idea. For example, if you bring them $50,000, or let's just use dollars, $50,000 in receivables as an option, and they say, look, I'll give you $30,000 right now, assuming that they collect 40, 45, or anything over 30, they've actually made money back on their investment. And depending on the time horizon, whether it's 6 months or a year, imagine you bring $50,000 of receivables to somebody that is future revenue for you, but you're going to have to wait for the whole year to get that money because you have to deliver services. And you sell it to somebody else for 30 grand right away. Well, you do lose money over the year, but you get that 30 grand right up front. Then when they go collect, they get, let's say, 40, 45,000. Everybody's happy. Everybody's made a lot more money quicker. And it's a wonderful way to do things if that's the right strategy for you. The last suggestion I have around using your assets to increase revenue is buy the building that you work out of, or rent out a part of the building that you work out of. So what does that mean? Well, we did this again with our media company, and I don't know why I have so many of these strategies from that company, because I've run a lot of other businesses, but we just did a lot of creative strategies with that business. And one of the things we did is we didn't actually buy the building, because the building we were working out of was quite big, and they wanted millions and millions of dollars at the time that we just didn't want to invest in the building. So what we did is we actually took a portion of the amount of space that we rented, and we actually divided it by putting up some, you know, barriers, just some regular old barriers that we went out and bought for $1,000 or a couple thousand dollars. And then we rented out an entire section to other businesses. We've actually done this in many of our studios and our offices at the media company around the world. And it's allowed us to essentially go practically rent-free in our own offices, because we're renting out a part of the offices or part of the building that we work out of. Now, I've also coached many businesses, and I've had many friends buy the building that they work out of. If you work out of your home, well, then of course it might be a good idea to consider buying your home to work out of it. If you're renting out of your home and this, you know, the strategy, you're like, how would I rent it out? Well, maybe, just maybe, maybe you could rent out a room for someone else to work out of. Even look, you might be going out to an office and your home is totally vacant all day long. Well, what if you rented out your home as an office? And you may think that's ridiculous. Okay, then maybe it's not the right strategy for you. But I've actually worked with a lot of my private clients, and they go off to an office, or they have their own building, or their business expanded, and they decide to rent out rooms in their own home to small practitioners and self-employed people that want to come in. And they just had rules around it. They couldn't come in before, you know, 9:30 a.m., and they had to be out by 5:30, but they got to use the office all day long. Of course, you have to rent it to people you trust. You have to meet them, but it's like renting any kind of property. And for self-employed individuals that don't have space or don't want to work out of their own homes, it could be an amazing way for them to work, and it's great rent and cash flow for you. Okay, here's your bonus tip. This is way number 11. This is the last way that I have increased revenue, and this is called track every penny. What does this mean? I want to give you a challenge. This is one of your challenges out of this. I want to give you a challenge, and this is one of your challenges out of this this training. I want you to take 1 month, spend 1 month, and track every coin that comes through your hands, every dollar, every euro, every pound, or whatever the currency is that you're in. Spend 1 month tracking it, and I want you to keep a spreadsheet of all of your spending. So track everything that comes through your hands just for 1 month. You know, you don't necessarily have to do it this the moment you spend it. Grab a receipt, bring it home, put it on a spreadsheet, and at the end of the month, review everything that you have spent and look for areas where you could be cutting down what we call indiscretional spending, areas where you don't even realize that you're spending so much money every month. Then we're going to set a budget for the next month, and we're going to play to beat it for 1 month. Okay, what does that mean? It means you're going to set your spending so you can increase your overall revenue or cash flow. I should say really cash flow, because your revenue won't change based upon your spending. But your money in your pocket, your net revenue, your cash flow. Do this for your business. Do it for your personal life. Do it everywhere. Do it just for 1 month. Just take 1 month and do it, and your life will absolutely change. Track every penny. When you see that, go in and cut all of your indiscretional spending, and then set a new budget for the next month and play to beat that. Okay, those are the 21 ways that I have increased the amount of money in my pocket with my businesses. I hope you found that awesome. Those are really, honestly, lesser known strategies. I rarely see any business owners using a lot of these strategies until I come in and revamp their businesses. And I will share with you that, you know, a lot of my private clients, of course, you probably know that I charge 100 grand a year for my private clients. A lot of them freak out when they hear, you know, that amount of investment. I say, you know, don't worry, between the amount of revenue we're going to increase and between the amount of strategies we're going to put in to have more money in your pocket, it's going to be absolutely worth it. they get over themselves, they get over their fears, they invest in it. And most of them, when I just go through these 21 ways with them, honestly, within a year, have just saved and increased their net income by the amount that they invest just by tweaking out their current everyday activities in their business due to these 21 different ways to put more money in your pocket. So these are very, very, very powerful. And I'm sure you're going to go through them again and continue to look at ways you can implement your business. So here's your two-week challenge. I want you to go through each one of these that we just went through, and I want you to identify at least one thing in each one of these 11 that I went through today that can help you increase your end cash flow in your pocket. Okay? Just go through each one of those, at least circle at least one in each section. If you really can't find something in a section, jump on the forums, let me help you, because you should be finding something in every section. Then apply the results that you found in number one here. Apply those results to shoot for a 25% increase in cash flow over the next 2 weeks. And I know that's a big jump, but I think you can do it, and I've seen it happen 100 times before. So go for it. Our next call will be call number 9, and I'm going to be shifting gears entirely. We're going to move into crafting offers, packaging up your offers to increase people buying, and we're going to talk about group sales dynamics. It's going to be a very powerful call. We've had some clients just recently reshift their packaging, reshift their offers, and they've been selling more in 1 month than they did in the entire prior year of their business. So I'm going to go through all that with you next time. Best wishes for an awesome week. This is Kane Minkus. My love to you. Go out, be more successful than you have been all year this next couple of weeks. Put these things into action. Get on the forums if you need any help, and I will talk to you soon. Have a great one.